along will be in the book of Hebrews chapter 6. Hebrews chapter 6. We'll spend most of our time there this morning. As you're turning there, I look out and I see almost a full audience, and that's a good sign. We want to welcome all of you here this morning, several of our own members, but also quite a few visitors. And we're just so thankful that all of you can make it out here this morning. We did want to say one thing. As this starts to happen, as you start to see more and more people come, and we're so thankful that we all are here this morning, but that does create a problem. And that is, towards the beginning of services, you don't need to do it now because we don't have anyone back there, but towards the beginning of services, we have a lot of people in the back looking for places to sit. And so it's hard from the back to see some places up here up front, but if we can, just as a congregation, just be aware, and maybe as you find your seats, as you come in, start sitting towards the center, and that way as people come in, we can kind of fill in some of the edges outside. That would be very helpful. The elders will try to help remind us at the beginning to get us more in the middle, and that way we can get some crowds to thin out back there towards the beginning. Like I said, good problem to have, and that's because so many people are here wanting to worship God, and we're just so thankful for that. A few things that we need to be mindful of coming up. Tonight's Bible classes will be the last of this quarter. I know that you know we'll have some new classes starting in just about a week and a half or so. On Wednesday night, we'll have our quarterly singing. It's a good chance for y'all to come and sing some songs. Next Sunday night, we'll have our second song of service. We'll start a new theme song for next quarter. We'll have a lesson on that next Sunday night. And then we'll start in April our Wednesday night series, and that's going to be similar to our summer series of last year, but it's going to be just for the month of April where we have guest speakers. There's been a lot of questions about classes this year. Are we going to have Bible classes? We'll have more announcements on this as we go, but middle school and up for that Wednesday series will be here in the auditorium listening to those speakers. If all the other kids' classes will still be going on just as planned. Same teachers, same classrooms, same material. We're not going to disrupt them. But middle school on up will be up here for that Wednesday night series. And so we'll have, again, more announcements on that later. But just people have been asking. We want to start getting that word out so that there's no questions when the time comes. One of my favorite meals, if not my favorite meal ever, is lasagna. And there's just something about it. I tell Brooke all the time, there's no such thing as bad lasagna. Even when you get bad lasagna, it's still great lasagna. And you can add whatever you want to it. I don't mind the eggplant. I don't mind the spinach. Some people try to fancy it up. I don't mind just the plain and simple lasagna. It's my favorite meal. I don't know why, but it is. And I get it a couple times out of the year. Brooke likes to make it, and I get it other places as well. But there's one day where I always love lasagna, and that's my birthday. And that's because I get to choose the meal. And I always try to go out for a meal, and then I always want Brooke's lasagna. But she hates making lasagna. And that's because, you know, she makes homemade sauce. It's not just, you know, open up a can and dump it on, which I don't mind, but her lasagna, in my opinion, is the best. And it's probably because it's all homemade. So there's a lot of steps to it. And it's one thing after another. And then once she makes the sauce, you know, she's got to do the meat, and then you got to layer it all. And it's a big, big process. And it's a big meal to make the way she makes it. And she always says, you know what, this is a labor of love for you. And I always am so appreciative of it because I know how much work goes into it. And so that lasagna to me just tastes that much better because I know the work that she puts into that one meal for my special day. And I'm sure that you all have something like that. Maybe it's a meal where it's a very hard meal to make, but you'll make it for someone you love. And you call it that labor of love. Or maybe there's an activity that you don't really like to do, but you'll do it anyways. Or maybe husbands, it's that checklist that the wives give us, and we don't really want to do it, but it's been around for about 6 months to 2 years, and we just say, you know, it's our labor of love. I have to do it because I love my wife. And we kind of have that phrase that you see up there on the screen, that when we do nice things for people that might take a long time or might take a lot of effort. Not necessarily that we don't want to do it, although that might be the case sometimes, but we typically call it that. It's a labor of love. You know, there's something that the Hebrew writer says here in Hebrews chapter 6, and that's why I had you turn to here. Because there's something that's said here that he actually calls it a labor of love, but it makes me think of what's our labor of love. You know, we understand what God's labor of love was to us and what Christ's labor of love was to us, that Christ came here, God gave up his only begotten son, and that was a labor of love. He had to watch his son die. Jesus, I say all the time, you know, it was love that held him on the cross. And that labor of love that he had to go through the agony and the pain and the torture of the cross so that we can have forgiveness of sins. But yet there's something that's brought up here in Hebrews that is our labor of love. And I thought it was interesting, and I've read through this several times, but as I was thinking about service and just happened across these verses, I thought, what's our labor of love toward God? The Hebrew writer says, starting in verse 9 of Hebrews chapter 6, he says, "But beloved, we are confident of better things concerning you. Yes, things that accompany salvation, though we speak in this manner. For God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love which you have shown toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. And we desire that each one of you show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end, that you do not become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." You know, there's a problem in the book of Hebrews. And that is, you had a lot of these Jews that were converting over to Christianity and following Christ. But what happened when things got difficult, especially the persecutions, and when people started persecuting the church and the individuals, what happened was it was easier just to go back to the way things used to be. It was easier to give up your hope in Christ and your work for the kingdom of God and go back to being a Jew. And if you weren't a Jew, it was easier just to go back to the lifestyle of the Gentiles. Peter would write about that in his apostle when he says, we spend enough of our past lifetime living the life of the Gentiles. So he says, let's not go back. And that's kind of been the mentality all the way from the New Testament, even up until today. That when things get difficult, especially spiritually, the easy answer is just to give up and go back with what we're used to. Or go back to living a life of sin, or whatever the situation may be. We say, you know what, if things get hard and things get too difficult, I'm gonna go back. But what the Hebrew writer is coming to here, he says, let's not forget 1 year salvation. He says, we've talked to you about all these different things about salvation, but in verse 10, he says, God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love, which you have shown toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints and do minister. And there he brings up that idea of labor of love. He says, God has not forgotten what you are doing. And there's a message in there for us. That for you and I, when things get difficult, and we'll talk about those hard times here in a second, but we need to remember something as we go throughout this sermon. God will remember our labor of love, and he says, towards his name. You know, there are times when life gets hard and things get difficult, and we persevere. And we continue working, and we continue pushing on, we continue teaching, we continue trying to further the gospel. The Hebrew writer says, God's not going to forget that. God's going to remember your labor of love towards his name. And these people had obviously loved the Lord and took the work of the kingdom very seriously. But more important, he says, God will remember our labor of love towards his saints. He says that you are ministering to his saints, and you do minister. That is, you're continuing to minister. You can insert the word, some of your versions might, because it goes right along with our theme of this year's, that you serve his saints. God will remember our labor of love towards serving his saints or ministering to his saints. You know, we still have certain duties towards the world. And you could look at Scripture and you can make a list and compile a list of our individual duties towards people out in the world that aren't considered saints or aren't considered members of the saved body of Jesus Christ. And I don't want to take anything away from the obligations we have to the people in this world. But we have a deeper and more loving obligation towards the saints of Jesus Christ. Here he says that God's not going to forget your labor of love towards the saints. In the book of Galatians, if you want to keep a finger in the book of Hebrews, because we're going right back there, but in the book of Galatians, in chapter 6, in verse 10, listen to what Paul says there. Now, this might sound kind of harsh, but this just goes to show us the understanding we need to have for the love towards our brotherhood. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 10, it says, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all." So he's not taking anything away from doing good to all people in this world, but he says, "Let us do good to all, especially to those who are the household of faith." But Paul makes it very clear that we have an obligation to every single person in this world and do good to all people, but especially to the household of faith, especially to ministering to the saints of Jesus Christ. Why? Because we share a brotherhood. We share a bond that is unlike any other bond. We share a love and compassion for the same God, but also for each other. It's once been said that whoever honors the saints and serves them honors and serves God. That's what the Hebrew writer is saying here. That God's not going to forget our labor of love toward His name and toward His saints. But this is also the same thing that Jesus preached on time and time again. In the book of Matthew, in chapter 22, it says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. You shall also love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." This was the same principle that Jesus taught. And not that Jesus taught, but Jesus made it very clear that this wasn't His new commandment. This was all the law before Him and the prophets as well. This has been the very principle that God wanted all of His people to understand. That we serve God and we serve each other. It's what we see Christ preach. It's what we see the apostles preach. It's what we see every New Testament Christian doing and being praised for. And this is the basis of all the law and prophets. And it's what you and I have been talking about for the last 3 months, especially. But hopefully what we've been talking about our entire lives, our service to God and our service to other people. But what happens here in the book of Hebrews is people have looked at the service towards God and towards His saints and a lot of people are starting to figure out that it's hard work, and so it's easier just to not do it. Or it's easier to let somebody else do it. Or it's easier just to give up completely and go back to the life that they knew before. And so the Hebrew writer is having to write to them and remind them that you need to be better. You need to persevere. You need to be diligent. But he makes one thing very clear, and that when it's time to get to work, the Lord's work is very hard. And the Lord's work is very difficult to do. And a couple weeks ago, we had a sermon that looked at the cost of our discipleship. And what happens is so many people, they're so gung-ho to become Christians, but we don't really count the cost of what it's going to take to continue my discipleship. And we realize it's entirely too difficult to serve God in this life and to serve His people. And so, we just won't do it. Or we'll try to get by with doing the bare minimum. But that just doesn't work. It's like the parable of the soils. As a farmer goes out to sow his seed, and it falls on all these different kinds of soils, the birds will eat up some, and some are going to be trampled by men. Some are going to sprout up, but nowhere to grab root. And so the sun's going to dry them out. Some are going to sprout up and they're going to look beautiful, but they're going to grow up with weeds and eventually they're going to be choked out by the weeds. And some are going to grow up and they're going to produce fruit 100-fold. What the Lord says, the point of that parable is, He says there's a lot of people out there that want to hear the gospel and some will reject it, yes, that it'll be eaten up by the birds. He says, but some will want to hear the gospel and they'll start out so excited and then they'll realize, well, the gospel is not really for me. And so they'll let the sun dry them up. That is, they'll only grow for a short amount of time and then wither away. And some people, they'll grab root and they'll grow and they're so excited. They'll work hard for the Lord, but they'll let the life and the thorns and the weeds of this world, the sins of this world, choke them out. because they realize just how hard and difficult this world is. But then there's those that persevere and are diligent. They work hard. They produce fruit. He says that's the soil we should want to be. But when you think about the kingdom of God today, it's hard work. It's hard to work for God's kingdom. And it shouldn't be any surprise to us. But it's hard to not give in to sin and temptation. It's hard to not be committed to the Lord. It's hard watching the rest of the world get ahead when it seems like they're the ones doing wrong and I'm the one doing right. It's hard watching good people suffer. It's hard watching moms and dads have to bury their children. It's hard watching the righteous people go through troubles. It's hard to not give in to certain things that our friends are doing or that society deems acceptable. It's hard to not look at people of the opposite sex. It's hard to watch our tongues. It's hard to be honest when it's so easy to lie. It's hard not to gossip when it's so fun to talk about other people. It's hard looking at society around us rip our Christian morals apart and throw them down the drain. And when you look at everything that we have to go through as Christians today, you can sit there and say, it is hard being a Christian. And I think it's true. Now, I've heard it said, and I completely disagree with this, it's harder being a Christian today than it is back then in the New Testament. I absolutely disagree with that. Because I can't remember the last time I know someone that was put to death for what they believe in. It's hard being a Christian. It's hard working for God and continually being upbeat and positive about it. We're going to have our days where we feel like giving up. I think that's completely normal. But it was hard back in Jesus' day, and it's still hard today. Jesus told his apostles, you're going to be hated. He told his apostles, you are going to die if you follow me. Jesus' life was not glamorous, and neither is the lifestyle of a Christian today. It's a lifestyle of daily self-denial, and it's a lifestyle of completely ridding ourselves of what we want in service of God's kingdom. It's daily putting all other people above ourselves. And sometimes that life just seems like it's too much. And so why not give in? And why not become like everybody else around us? Because so many people do. That's what the Hebrew writer is saying here. He's saying a lot of your friends have turned back. And we don't have time to go through the whole book of Hebrews, but this is what the book is about. A lot of people have turned back. He says, but God will not forget your labor of love. God will not forget your labor of love toward His name. He will not forget your labor of love toward His saints. And so he gives these people some reminders. He says, let's keep working. It's time to get to work. He says, it's up to you to be diligent to the end, he says in verse 11. Show the same diligence to the full assurance of hope until the end. He says, you have full assurance of hope. Peter would say that we need to be ready to give an answer for the hope that lies within us. And so many people just say, I hope heaven will be there. I hope that I have salvation. I hope that when I was buried in the waters of baptism, that was what I really needed to do and that it washed my sins away. I hope that all this is going to be worth it. And what the Hebrew writer is saying is, you have full assurance of hope. That is, it's not a hope as in, I don't know what it's going to be, and I hope it's there. He says, no, you have a hope that you are fully assured in. Now it's up to us to be fully diligent in that hope. Live that hope. I was always told that hard work pays off. And I've seen that in different aspects of my life. I saw it when I was a young boy, that when I worked hard, if mom and dad gave me a list of chores, and I did my list of chores, I was able to go outside and play. If I didn't do my list of chores, I had to stay inside until I finished. Hard work paid off. That was amplified when you start a job. You work hard, you get a raise. I remember coming home after my first raise, and I was working so hard. I was told if I work 3 months, and I worked hard, and I proved myself as a worker, I was on a 3-month, you know, a lot of jobs do this, you're on a little probation period, and then you get a raise at the end of that. And I was so excited. My 3 months, I was going to hit my raise, 25 cents. I thought, a quarter? A quarter an hour? That's what I worked hard for? But 6 months, I got another raise. It was 50 cents. And a couple months later, I was promoted to manager. There's a little place called Hot Dog on a Stick. I wore the funny outfits, wore the funny hat. Wasn't worth the money, but the hard work paid off. Because that job led to another job. And I even look at me getting into preaching. And I look at the congregations I've been with, and I like to think that I work hard. I have my days. I have my days where I don't want to go into the office. I have my days where I just want to be lazy. I have my days where I have no focus. I have my weeks where I say, I don't know what I want to preach on. I have my months where I say, man, if I can just get to the next month and I'll kind of just renew my spirit. I have those times. We all have those times. But I look at the congregation where I first started to where I am now, and I am so blessed to be a part of this congregation. I think it's because I worked hard, and I've been blessed because of it. Hard work pays off. But diligence is much more than hard work. Diligence carries the meaning of responsibility and reliability. That when someone is diligent in what they do, they're responsible to finish the task. That you can rely on that person to finish the task that they were given. The person who is diligent will make every effort to follow through in whatever it is that they have started, even when things get difficult. And that's what the Hebrew writer is trying to tell us. He says, you need to remain diligent until the end. You have a responsibility to be diligent to the end. If you've said that you're going to obey Christ and you've given your life to Him, then give your life to Him. And continue to work hard and be diligent. Proverbs 12 verse 27 says, diligence is man's precious possession. Also in Proverbs in chapter 21 and verse 5, it says, the plans of the diligent lead surely to plenty. You can almost just hear him saying, hard work pays off. And yet here we are in God's kingdom. In God's vineyard. I don't think it's any coincidence that Jesus, in a lot of his parables, he spoke about the kingdom being a vineyard or a field. And he talks about workers. That's you and I. And hard work will pay off. But he gives us another reminder. In Hebrews 6 and in verse 12, he says, see that you don't become sluggish. That is, don't be lazy. Don't just work hard, but there's going to be times where, as I said, we all have times. I'm sure, for any of you who love your job, I'm sure that you even still have times where you just don't want to go in the morning. I love what I do here. I can't see myself in any other profession but preaching. But there are times when I wake up and the boys are up at 6 or 6:30 in the morning and I've only had one cup of coffee that I just feel like the last thing I want to do is try to go work today. I am tired. Sometimes that happens spiritually. Where spiritually we just get tired. Because life happens. Because we lose loved ones. Because we go through the trials. Because we get sick. Whatever it is, we lose that diligence. And if you can imagine the Hebrew writer here, they're watching all their friends go back to the old lifestyle. They're watching people give up on their faith because life got hard. He's saying, don't get lazy. Don't get sluggish. Keep working. And we're not going to have overnight results. Keep going. Keep pushing forward. Why do we serve God and serve His people? Because it develops an attitude of diligence and obedience, and it steers us away from that lazy mindset. And he takes it a step further in verse 12. It's almost like you can hear him saying, don't be sluggish, and if you need help, then follow an example of someone that's come before you. He says, don't become sluggish, but imitate those who through faith and patience inherit the promises. That is, there have been people that have been through your footsteps. They've walked in your footsteps. Or maybe you're walking in their footsteps. And so imitate those people. Imitate the people that have been through this, that through faith and patience, they inherit the promises. Can you think of an example of someone who is just constantly serving God and serving others? There are several people that I look to when I think of serving God and serving others. Some people even here in this room. But in my young faith, I'll never forget one man. I was still in college. I was going through an internship, and I was in Indiana. And I had never met someone who was more genuine in his faith and his service to God. Always willing to give little talks, to say prayers, to teach Bible classes. And he was a great spiritual example to so many, publicly and even privately. But this man, he wasn't in really good health. Extremely overweight. He knew it, and that led to a lot of his health problems. But one day he asked me to go out to lunch. And that was kind of normal. I was the summer intern preacher, and it was normal for people to ask me out to lunch. I think the preacher put people up to it to kind of make me feel welcome to the congregation for the summer. And whenever I went out to lunch with somebody, it was always really quick, you know, fast food right by the church building or some little local restaurant, maybe like an Applebee's or something like that. But we started driving, and we drove for about 20, 30 minutes. And we pull up. He picked me up at the church building, and he drove me, and we pull up to Ruth Chris Steakhouse. And I thought it was a joke. I was looking for a Taco Bell somewhere in the same parking lot, all right? And he says, all right, let's go. I said, this is too much for lunch. I said, we got to go somewhere else. I said, you can't take me to Ruth Chris. He said, you know what? He goes, one, you can't tell me what I can do and what I can't do. He said, but two, he goes, there's a lot of ways I can't serve people. He says, because of my health, I can never help somebody move. I can't do the physical stuff. There's a lot of stuff I can't do at the church building. He says, but if this is one way that I could serve you, he goes, let me do it. And boy, I let him, right? I'm not going to pass up a good steak. But he was also the first person to where if his garden had fruits and vegetables, you would wake up in the morning and they would be right there on your front porch at about 6 a.m., which means he was up even earlier passing them around, and I know I wasn't the only one getting them. He was one of the first people that when I had a problem at my apartment, he was the first person there with his tools and said, what needs to be fixed? He would always, they would have a youth lectureship every year, and he would always spend $700 on pizza every year for all the young kids and never want anything in return. He's an example that I've always looked to because it was one of the first ones when I was out on my own that I really saw he not only loved God, but he loved God's people. And he was willing to do anything for God's people. And he didn't care who they were. He didn't care if they were and for lack of a better way to put this, he didn't care if you were the popular one in the congregation or the least popular one in the congregation. He just wanted to serve. And if there was an opportunity for him to do that, he did it. And what's most important that I saw is that he never wanted anybody to know about it. No one in the congregation knew what he was doing. No one in the congregation knew that it was him that every year bought $700 worth of pizza. And I know that's a minor little thing. But he didn't broadcast it. And I asked him one time, I said, can I pitch in some money? He said, nope. He says, this is how I serve. I look at someone like that, and that's just my example. Someone that I've looked to when I need a reality check and an attitude adjustment. And I'm sure that you all have your own. Maybe it's someone from when you were a child that you remember. Maybe it's a parent. Maybe it's a family member. Maybe it's a friend. Maybe it's a spouse. But what the Hebrew writer tells us, he says, follow those examples. Imitate those people who through faith and patience inherit the promises. And he says, and that's what we're working towards. Not that we're earning our salvation. I don't want to get that point across here. But he says, your labor of love is not going to be forgotten, that they inherit the promises. The reward for our labor or love will be to inherit the promises of eternal life. He says, God's not going to forget your labor of love. And we need to follow those people and imitate those people who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Well, he'll have a whole chapter dedicated to what the people did through their faith. By faith, Abraham was able to do all those wonderful things. And by faith, Moses was able to do all of his wonderful things. And by faith, you have all these people who are following the examples before them. And by faith, they were able to do wonderful things. And they were able to labor in love for the sake of God's kingdom and inherit the promises. And so by faith, what are you and I going to do? Will you and I continue to work in the Lord's kingdom? Will you and I continue to be diligent and persevere when this life gets difficult? To serve God and to serve His people? We had an elders and deacons meeting this last Monday night. And I want to share with you something that happened at the end. Because it was towards the elders and the deacons and myself. But I think it could go towards all of us. At the very end of our meeting, Wayne, who was leading the meeting that night, he quoted one verse. He said, whatever your hands find to do, do it with all your might. And he said, you know, we're doing a lot of things really well. And all he wanted to do was leave us with the one charge of, if we're doing things well, that's great. But let's make sure that we are doing it with all of our might. With everything that we have. And so this morning, as we pack up and we're about to all walk out and go back to our everyday lives, I want us to think about this life and how hard it gets. And it will be hard. But whatever our hands find to do, let's do it with all of our might. Let's work hard. Let's work hard in the Lord's kingdom. Because hard work pays off. And when we work hard and do it with all of our might, and we remain diligent and not be lazy, and we follow the examples of the people that have gone on before us, God is not unjust to forget your work and labor of love. which you have shown toward his name, and that you have ministered to the saints, and do minister. Let's not give up, and let's push on. And let's persevere. If you're here this morning and you need to give your life to Christ, now is the time to do so. Now is the time to start that labor of love. It's hard and it's difficult. I understand that. And it's hard to give up your life. It's hard to say that you're going to give up all the sins and pleasures of this world and you're going to live a life of self-denial and following Christ. That's difficult. But if you love Christ, you'll keep His commandments. And He's commanded us to be baptized in the waters of baptism and start living our lives for Him. If you need to do that now, don't wait a moment. Come forward as we stand and as we sing.